This is The Playbook.
Man, I have one of my favorite companies here, and even I just heard one of my wife's favorite company executives here, Steve Scholes, CEO, president, co-founder of Nectar, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
You're not mistaken.
That's all right. Sometimes correct. I give too many titles to too many people, and I try to do it off the top of my head. Welcome to SoFi Stadium, and welcome to The Playbook.
Hey, I appreciate it. It's a really an unbelievable spot you have here. Very, very impressive.
Well, we bring impressive, unbelievable people to this spot for various reasons, and one of them is to learn how you got where you are today. And your brand is not only big, but it's a positive brand. It's one that has a great impact on communities, not just providing great service and great products, but to the franchise owners. And I'm a big fan of small business and of building communities through economic development. For you, you didn't always start in this space. You know, what gave you a vision just to be into the franchise model?
You know, it took us a while to get in the franchise model. You know, Nectar was started out really as a one-off side. You know, there weren't any great grand plans, like, you know, a lot of things. You know, it was 2010. I think that the legacy juice bars of the world kind of lost their way, you know, since they've become glorified Dairy Queens, if you will, or ice cream shops. You could see a seismic shift in people going to Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and things of that nature. And my wife is a school teacher at the time, and I was kind of in between things. And, you know, she was health conscious. I was working out. I was going to one of those legacy things, but I kept gaining weight and realizing, hey, wait a minute, this is so cool.
Like, these are actually milkshakes
that I'm drinking. Right. I might as well go to Dairy Queen. And so, make a long story short, you know, we scrapped together $50,000. I talked to my gardener, Francisco. I said, hey, do you know anything about, you know, building stores? He's like, nah.
So sure enough, he came over
and we threw $50,000 together. We put up one store. And fast forward 12 years later, and we'll do $125 million this year. And we have a couple hundred stores, another 100 and something in development. And so it's been quite a journey.
Well, let me pick that apart a little bit, because you mentioned you were in between things. And I always say, when we're in between things, we can either feel punished for being in between things or promoted and protected. For you, the mindset at that time, what were you looking forward to help the co-creativity of thinking about, hey, you know, this is what's missing in my life, and maybe I'll put this investment money together and give this a shot?
You know, prior to sitting down with you, I was reading your book, and, you know, and there are a lot of things that I could relate to, in the sense of, you know, through the years, I've started a number of businesses, some successful, some, you know, not so successful. And, you know, at the time of Nectar, it was 2008. The economy obviously had come down, and I was doing infomercials at the time, and the infomercial world just went to shit, really.
Yeah.
It just wasn't there. But I'd always been an optimist. I've always been an entrepreneur. And, you know, when a business failed, it never crossed my mind that I wouldn't get back up and be successful and persevere through it. So it never really crossed my mind. And yeah, when my wife and I talked about this, what it really came down to was we were looking for something, you know, aspirational, something you talked about earlier, affordable, accessible. We just felt that a lot of the newer juice bars that you see in LA and Manhattan were very elitist and Hollywood-esque, but we wanted to go to the communities, to the Mission Viejos, Ladera Ranches, the Soccer Mom community.
You know that's where I live, right?
That's exactly. That's what Natalie told me that. I was like, yeah, exactly.
That's amazing. Yeah. And you also talked about how long it takes, you know, and we slip by that a lot of times. And I think one of the things that we look at is good habits take as long as bad habits to show themselves. And what I say that is that a lot of times when we have a good idea or a good business like Nectar Juice Bar, that we don't get the results immediately. And when we have bad habits, we don't get the results immediately. The difference is, if we're doing good things and we don't have patience or beliefs, then we quit because we don't get results immediately. Then the negative habits, we continue because we don't get results. And so we feel as if, well, these aren't going to impact me. If I smoke cigarettes, I'm healthy today. I've been doing it. How many people say I've been smoking cigarettes 10 years and it's year 11, that all of a sudden there's a spot on your lungs? For you, how did you have the patience and belief to know, because you're going to be over $125 million, but it didn't happen overnight. In fact, if I asked you, you know, what were your revenues in year one with that, you know, piece together?
They were less.
A little bit less, right?
Yeah, less.
So how did you have that patience that you were on the right track early on when I'm sure you weren't getting as much positive feedback as you're getting today?
You know, a lot of it, I think, comes from, again, lessons learned from past experiences, which I'm sure you can relate to. And, you know, for us, we always viewed it, and to this day, we viewed it as, you know, one guest, one customer at a time, one store at a time. And, you know, my goal is if somebody walks in the store and they walk out in a better mood than they walked in, and we treat the team member well and they're in a good mood, they're going to make a good drink, they're going to serve with a smile on their face, you know, and then, you know, if we do our job, my view was at the end of the day, maybe there's a few bucks left over. If we don't do a job, then there isn't, and that's what we deserve. And so we've just viewed it one store, one customer, and, you know, and you talk about the speed and the growth. So when we first opened, we just got inundated for the first 2 years with franchise inquiries. Now, the younger self would have gone ahead and sold out, so to speak. I mean, I could have sold 100, 200, 500 franchise agreements for $35,000 and
right.
$10 million in
dissipated
the bank.
The value.
And I would have been in Newport Harbor on a big boat and drinking and partying, and then 2 years later, I'd be bankrupt, and then where would I be? And so we waited until 2012, and we decided to sit down and discuss how we wanted to look at franchising, and we decided to award 6 franchise locations and sit on it for 2 years. Even though we had competitors starting to peep up and copycats and stuff, I just felt it was an important iterative relationship that we needed to understand. You know, it had to work with a franchise partner. They had to make money. They had to enjoy it. They had the culture, the quality of the product. They had to like us and what we provided. And sure enough, that proved to work, and developed a franchise model in between 14 and 15, and then formally started franchising in 15, while we simultaneously kept building corporate locations. So we run both.
And you built a culture within, especially those 2 years. You started to figure out and learn lessons. What were some of the things that you didn't anticipate in kind of the 2 years of research when you started to those 6 franchises? What didn't you anticipate that you found out by going slow and being so methodical about the scaling of your business?
There are a few things. As it relates to the franchise partner, a couple things took place. One is the franchise stores actually run better than the corporate locations. You know, they were fully vested. You know, rather than have an employee, they owned it. They were into it.
It was their life.
And Alexis was very worried about the culture, but the culture really translated because the people we were very particular. We remained very particular on who we accept as franchise partners. When we pick the partners, we want to pick people that are aspirational, that are enthusiastic, that match our views, that our values, and what they want to achieve, giving back to the community. And that translated to the team members that they hired. And so we were surprised. We were worried that they would go out there and just think they're going to open a store and it's going to spit money out and they're going to make money and not have to work and things of that nature. So that was a great surprise. The other surprise was we tried different markets, meaning, sure, it worked in Southern California, but was it going to work in Colorado and Texas and different parts of the country? So we wanted to have proof of concept. So we went to Denver. Sure enough, on a Sunday during the Broncos game, we were having record sales, you know, which was very surprising to me, which went a long way to, you know, where the brand can travel and what we've done with it over the years.
And, you know, beyond service and culture, you still have to have a quality product. And juice bars weren't proven in a mass scale to be able to be, number one, just as a genre or an industry, a quality product that you could sell that way. But even within the context of the industry or category itself, you still have to have a really, to be that successful, you have to have a really good tasting product.
You do.
And I think, you know, it amazes me with entrepreneurs like you that you're not a chemist. You're not, you know, it's like Sidney Frank creating Grey Goose vodka. That's a whole new taste of vodka that sure. He had, this French influence, expensive vodka. I see the same thing at Nectar Juice Bar. Like the first time that I went, it was different and better.
Yes.
And how did you figure out different and better so early when you're not really or hadn't had been in that space other than drinking the milkshakes from, you know, the 24-hour fitness bar?
Yeah, all the credit to that goes to Alexis. I think, you know, and she and I shared a vision about menus. We go out to dinner and we hate overwhelming menus. And obviously, like a lot of people, big fans of In-N-Out, the simplicity.
Yeah.
You know, very few companies can do that, maybe one, which is them. But we wanted to keep it very simple, meaning we want 6 juices, 6 smoothies, 4 bowls. And the other thing we wanted to do, a couple things we wanted to do is, one is we wanted to keep the menu simple, and we didn't want people to feel intimidated. A lot of time you think juice can be an intimidating word. You're used to organic juice bars and exotic menus and ingredients, ashwagandha and turmeric and this and that, all these things that people don't understand. So we wanted to make it affordable, we wanted to make it accessible, we wanted to make it taste good, and we wanted to make it, you know, not intimidating, so people could feel comfortable buying it. And I think that she did a terrific job, you know, doing that with the products, while getting rid of all the processed, you know, ingredients, in the sense of we really don't have any processed ingredients that come through our doors, and you know, in 2010, and you know, not today. And the goal of 2010 was, you know, where society was going as far as health and wellness. And sure enough, you fast forward to today, and you know, it's even more so true. So,
and a leader and a recognizable brand as well, which is so important. Now, beyond that, the understanding who you can help. We talked, and I talked about it earlier, how important your business is to our community by creating economic development, by giving owners an opportunity to make money, but also to employ a whole bunch of different people within a culture to create more entrepreneurs. Right. And, you know, as I have grown up in Southern California, and my kids and their friends all have worked for your company or others like it, that's really the future of America.
No, it is. And, you know, and the restaurant business is one of those unique places where, you know, you can't go to work at Disney or at CCA in the mailroom and work your way up to the top, right? However, at a restaurant, you can still start as a waiter, as a dishwasher, and make your way up. And along those lines, we have discovery days about every 2 weeks, and we get probably 20 qualified candidates each time. It's what we usually sell out at or limited to. And it wasn't more than a month ago, and sure enough, we had somebody that started out as a juicer, went to a shift lead, went to assistant manager, went to a manager, and just opened the first location. So to be able to see, you know, that kind of, because, you know, some people are there just for the job and get off at 5 and go meet their girlfriend or boyfriend, whatever it may be.
Sure.
But other people, you know, look at it as a career and to provide, you know, a stepping stone for whatever their choice may be is what we hope to do. We hope to aspire them to, you know, whatever their goals are, whether it be with Nectar or outside of something else, if we can help, you know, facilitate that, you know, through our mentorship, through our management, through our team, we're happy to do, you know. And so.
And one of the things people don't realize is success itself can be a huge challenge in scaling that success, because things grow exponentially. And several different times you've been very controlled in your story about, you know, only this many people can come, only this many stores are going to open.
Right.
But it becomes a point where you're doubling and the numbers become so big that different challenges occur. For you, what do you see as the biggest challenge now as you get over that 125 million mark? Where do you see the biggest challenges for that scalability and growth?
The, you know, it's interesting you brought that up, because I was talking to somebody, I was at a conference in Indianapolis yesterday speaking about, you know, Nectar and such, and you know, I was talking about how the first, probably with you as well, the first several years were the most fun, you know, trying to make payroll, running to buy out coconut water out of parsley and kale and apples. So I'm driving all over town, and you know, those are really, you know, and now it's actually become a business, you know, it's become a bigger business, it's become more sophisticated, and so the challenges really are, you know, the trying to keep it simple within the box of which we are. You know, own who we are, stay who we are, and a lot of people try and influence us to go outside the box, offer things because we have, you know, our app, we have 1,000,000, 2 or 3 or 4 on our app, we have access to sell a lot of products, but every time somebody comes in, so I think for our team, the key is to try and keep everybody focused on, let's do what we're doing, do it well, and then also provide a vision for the future on, you know, what is the next step look like, you know, what does Nectar look like in 5 years or in 24 months, 36, 5 years, 10 years. And our next step will be reinventing the food space within the juice category. I think that's gone wayward as well. And so that's the next project that we're tackling that will be released in 23. And I think it'll be a very, you know, fruitful project, but it's a very interesting challenge.
And how many states are you guys in right now?
About 20.
In 20. And yeah. Do you see for the other 30 states, certain states that you think will be more aligned with Nectar's offerings than others, or have we hit, you know, chasm when it comes to juice bars that all the other states are going to be, you know, completely aligned and excited about what's going on?
Well, it's interesting you bring up, because the word you just used a second ago, or two words you used, were juice bar. And we're right in that, we've been in a debate for a year or so now, whether we keep juice bar as part of our name, whether we substitute for something else, because does that limit us? Is it more intimidating? And really what we learned, you talked to early on, we talked about the early stages. And one of the things that we learned was, by going to Denver and these other places, is that we were a lifestyle brand. You go to legacy brands and say, we go to Chicago, we go to Kansas City, we go to Colorado, and our sales are, you know, off the roof, where you have the legacy brands exiting and, you know, leaving those territories. So I think that the lifestyle brand, you know, anybody that aspires to live a healthier lifestyle, and we know a lot of people that aspire to do that, you know, I think that they'll find this this brand attractive. And so we've gone into, you know, a lot of small towns. You know, we go out to, not small towns, but you'll go out to Chandler, Arizona, you go out to, you know, Midland, Texas, you go out to all over the place. And, you know, there's people out there that, you know, aspire to it, and to make it available to people is an exciting thing for us, and provides a lot of satisfaction. So,
yeah, I was going to say, you have varying degrees of satisfaction in purpose and fulfillment in what you're doing. Looking at the business itself, though, there's a lot more to do. And as you have worked extremely hard and diligently to build it where it's at, do you see yourself continuing to stay with this business, or hand it off and allow someone else to take it over someday?
At some point, I think that, yeah, you know, you grow to a certain level, and as we know, there's skill sets to take it from one store to two, from 10 to 20, you know, from 50 to 100 million. And, you know, I'm your prototypical founder entrepreneur. I'm not your prototypical or CEO, so to speak. You know, at some point, we need an adult in the room to.
I love that. We've done pretty well so far. I'm pretty impressed. And I meet a lot of entrepreneurs.
And I've got a great team. So I have every faith in the world that they have, you know, the skill and the talent and the job to do it. And quite frankly, when I'm out of the office, things run better than when I'm in, because I go a little crazy, you know. So, and I think they probably agree with that statement. But I can provide the vision, and they believe in that vision. They stand behind me, and they've got a lot of constitution and a lot of fortitude. And I think for any business, for any successful, anybody that wants to be successful, you have to have that constitution. You have to have that curiosity. You got to have that perseverance. And if you have that, then anything's, you know, you can be successful in anything. It doesn't, you know, really make a difference. And you know, for me, I'm sure I'll go on to the next challenge, and I'll still be, I'm sure, part of Nectar as well. But at some point, you know, there's always something out there, and I'm sure that'll go well, go, you know, the way it should.
I'm sure it will. And I always say the common denominator of all the thousands of guests we've had on here, the spirits of excellence, is that desire that they must be what they can be, that creates the consistent, persistent pursuit of the potential. Speaking of potential, you're only in 20 states and you're doing extremely well. How big do you think this business can get?
We can easily get to be a $1 billion brand. There isn't any doubt about that. So, you know, we've run the analytics. We've looked at the numbers. We've looked at, you know, the white space out there. We've looked at, you know, obviously nationally and internationally what we can do. So we certainly believe it's a $1 billion brand. It's just a matter of how fast we want to get there. And there's some internal debates on, you know, because we can dial it up or we can slow it down. But again, I have been more of the aggressive restrained growth. I'd like to grow, but again, I don't want to spread the team too thin. I don't want to spread and see the quality go down. I did that early on. I tried it in 2013. I think I tried to open 30 locations or whatever the number was. I almost bankrupt the company. I the quality of the service went to shit, and it took us 2 years to recover. We did, and I promised myself I wouldn't do that again. But now we are bigger, so we can grow. But rather than going from, you know, 50 to 500 stores a year, we can go from 50 to 75 to 100 to a couple hundred. So,
last question real quick, because I would be amiss if I didn't ask. Obviously, for you and I, marketing has changed dramatically since you founded the business to today. Yeah. And it's accelerated so much. I even, for my own personal brand, I can't believe, you know, where I spend my marketing dollars to build my brand and others. For you, you know, how has that changed from the traditional marketing that I'm sure you started out with to social media today, and by attracting more customers with it, attracting more franchisees with it? You know, how important, you know, is your adaptation to the new ways of marketing compared to what you and I learned in the infomercial days?
Yeah, and then, frankly, that's how it was back in the day when we opened. You know, we take ads in Daily Pilot, the local newspaper, and we'd send coupons out in the little Valpak mailers or ads in the Penny Saver or things like that.
That's where I was introduced to you right there.
Yeah, exactly right. And, but you fast forward today and everything's changed. I mean, it's all digital, you know, from the ordering platform. We went from 20% to over 60% with online orders. From our marketing, our budget is all basically geared towards, you know, social. It's really, and one of the frustrating things that I get, I like people to be forward thinking and come outside the box. And so I kind of drive, they get a little crazy because I try and drive them a little bit hard. But I think that, you know, TikTok and Instagram and all those platforms can be so engaging, from attracting franchise partners, attracting staff, attracting guests, getting people engaged, having different, you know, different platforms and programs to use. So we've got a good marketing team. They're on it. I'm just, my patience isn't that great, so I keep pushing them a little bit harder. So
we don't understand, but I would think in your space it's so authentic, being able to capture your product and people's reaction and satisfaction from it. When I think of your company, I think of good people first and good product second, but a deadly combination when it comes to having a successful business, especially with a seasoned entrepreneur and a humble entrepreneur. Steve Scholes, thank you so much for joining me. This is David Meltzer with Entrepreneurs, The Playbook.